It's an exciting time to be in Unamagi, Cape Breton. We're having an economic renaissance.
There are a lot of good things going on, and that doesn't get reported.
Throughout this series, we'll show you why there's never been a better time to invest in Cape Breton.
Especially in a place like Glace Bay, we see a massive opportunity.
Welcome back to Invest in Cape Breton. I'm your host, Michelle Sampson. So far in this series, we've been talking to community and business leaders about initiatives that are lifting Unamagi Cape Breton's economy to new heights. This episode is a bit different. This time, we're leaning into a challenge that exists not just here on the island, but across Canada, going deep on the very hot topic of housing and development. The housing crisis is making day-to-day life incredibly challenging for many people. The news is dominated by their stories. But what we hear less about is the work happening behind the scenes to fix it. There are housing advocates, developers, and politicians right here in Unamagi, Cape Breton, who are making tangible progress towards solutions. I'm not just talking about paper pushing, which is an important part of the process. I'm talking about shovels in the ground to build more housing. Yes, affordable housing too. In this fourth episode of Invest in Cape Breton, we're going to hear from a real estate insider who'll give us the lay of the land. We'll also hear from two developers, Doucette Developments and By the Bay Properties, about what they're doing to address the crisis, what they're building, when the units might be available, and what they think can be done to help developers build even more housing. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode, the Construction Association of Nova Scotia and Doucette Developments. Let's start with some broad context. Our first guest is Roger Boutelier, the CEO of the Nova Scotia Association of Realtors. NSAR represents realtors across Nova Scotia, and their mandate includes doing research on the housing market. I asked Roger to explain how he got into this mess.
During the pandemic, the housing market took off like a rocket ship. And there were a number of reasons for that. Nova Scotia is no longer the best kept secret in the world. Quite honestly, like people have discovered Nova Scotia, and that's great. And then we've had interest rates at or near zero. So borrowing money was almost free. But the housing market right now, I mean, it is subdued compared to the last 3 years. Sales are down Nova Scotia year to date. So we're talking to the end of November, down approximately 17.6%. But the interesting thing is prices are up by 2.5%. And in Cape Breton specifically, the housing market is down 21% year over year, and the housing prices are actually up 6.6%. So even though sales are down, the prices are up, and that's simply because there's a lack of inventory.
So specifically for that inventory, what has contributed to that?
Yeah, there's no one single source. There's a whole bunch of, factors that have contributed to this, for lack of a better term, perfect storm right now in the housing industry and in Canada, not just Nova Scotia. You know, for the last 25 years in the province of Nova Scotia, we had virtually no development in social housing. We had no development in senior housing. So those are two contributing factors. And we're going back 25 years. So yes, there was some development, but it was very, very minimal. And then we had a population boom. I mean, we surpassed 1 million for the first time in Nova Scotia's history. The population continues to come in, and the government has a lofty goal of increasing the population to 2 million by 2050. So you have all these people coming in at a time when there wasn't a lot of housing development going on. And then, you know, for the last 20 years, the development that we did have was more on the single family home side rather than developing what I'll call the missing middle. So your townhouses, your row houses, starter homes, that sort of thing. The development was on, you own an acre of land and you build a big home. And that was the development. Those take time. So there wasn't a lot of density development. So all those factors contribute to the crisis that we see today. And it's not just Nova Scotia. These are issues felt across the country.
So is this a problem across all pricing ranges?
The simplistic answer to that question is yes. Some portions of the spectrum are hit harder than others, but I would say there is a lack of inventory across the whole housing spectrum in Nova Scotia. Most specifically, though, in the, social housing and lower income housing and the senior housing as well. Because a lot of folks that have reached retirement are aging in home now rather than moving to senior housing. And I don't mean a nursing home or anything like that, but we don't have any retirement community. So we're starting to get them. But that was a part of the spectrum that's been missing. They're forced to age in home, and now they're stuck in a home that, quite frankly, is much too large for them. But they have nowhere to go.
So a population boom, combined with a quarter century of building almost no social or senior housing, minimal row homes, townhomes, and starter homes, and too many big single detached homes, have created a supply and demand problem. It is not a good recipe for anyone who needs to buy a house right now. What are the realtors hearing from these people who are looking to buy here?
The mood is not great, let's be honest. You have a whole bunch of factors contributing to that. You have the low inventory. You have the higher interest rates, but we're also coming off an era where the interest rates were at an all-time low. And the interest rate increases happened quickly. So we had 3 or 4 interest rate jumps in 2023. And it went from, you know, you get a mortgage for 2% or lower to now, you know, I think if you're lucky, you can get one below 6%. That was quite a jump. And then, of course, with the higher prices requires a higher down payment. It's not like it was in Nova Scotia 10 years ago, where if you wanted to buy a home, you simply called your realtor and boom, you had a home. Those days are gone, and we probably won't see them again for a number of years. Because there is no one silver bullet. So we are hearing from home buyers that it is a challenge now to find a home, but that's the beauty of using a realtor. They know the mortgage people, the inspectors, all the professionals that are related to the real estate industry, and they can help set expectations as well. HGTV doesn't do us any favors. I think sometimes the consumer's reality is somewhat misaligned with the reality of what's actually available.
How long is it taking for someone to find a house now?
Well, you know, that it depends. And I'm not trying to be on the fence with this. It depends the price point. It depends on what community you're looking in. It depends on, you know, how much they have for a down payment. If you're looking for a home that's $600,000 plus, they're staying on the market longer than the homes that are priced $350,000 and below.
Fair enough. I'm going to ask you to look into the crystal ball a little bit, barring any surprise economic or political changes. What do you expect the market to do in the next few years?
This is purely, I would say, well-informed speculation. So the interest rates are expected to come down. So that will ease the burden with regards to mortgage payments. CMHC just released a stat that Nova Scotia has the most new development in the country. So we're leading the way with regards to that, which is fantastic. The beauty of this is it's not just one piece of the spectrum that's coming on board right now. There's developments in rentals, there's development in social housing, there's development in senior housing. So once this starts to come on board, it's going to free up those that are aging in place right now or aging in home. They'll have a place to go, which in turn puts that old new stock on the market, right? So it's not just new stock, but we all know you can't build a home or multi-unit overnight. So we're talking years here now. And not 2024, I'm looking 2025, 2026, 2027 and beyond. But when that inventory comes to market, it will help ease the burden. So I do believe within the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see the housing market stabilize. Hopefully, knock on wood, the interest rates will stabilize as well.
And what about the actual housing prices? Like the prices went up so much during the pandemic. You know, there was a time when here in Cape Breton, it wasn't all that unusual to be able to find a home, not just a piece of land for under $100,000. Are the prices going to come down at all? Are we ever going to see that again?
I would say unequivocally, those days are gone. Nova Scotia was undervalued for so long. For fun, one day I did a tour of a development here in Halifax, and it was on the water, and it was a condo. And I took a look, and it was priced at, now we're going back a number of years now, but it was priced at $499,000, just under $500,000. You could have took that same condo and put it in Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Calgary, and got double or triple what they were offering. And it's the same condo. It's on the waterfront. It's in Nova Scotia. It was undervalued. And right now, I think there was a value correction, not a price correction, but a value correction. And the pandemic amplified that because we were on our way. Prices were edging up in 2018, 2019, and then the pandemic hit. And there's a lot of factors in that as well. It's quite frankly, I would put our quality of life up against any other provinces just in terms of what we have to offer. So long-winded answer to your question, I do not see the days of buying a home for less than $200,000 and that being the norm. Those days are gone. Will they come down? I mean, there's going to be ebbs and flows, but they will be in the normal 2-3%, not the 20, 40, you know, 60% appreciation we were seeing.
All right. So Roger's well-informed speculation is that prices will not be crashing down. But for buyers, it is good news that at least they won't be going up as much. As he mentioned earlier, one factor that will ease the burden on prices and give home buyers and renters more options is the fact that housing construction is happening. Up next, we'll hear from the developer behind a major waterfront development in downtown Sydney. First, a message from one of our sponsors. The Construction Association of Nova Scotia, CANS, is proud to be a voice for the construction industry, representing members throughout Cape Breton. They're more than just builders. They're a community. CANS's strong relationship with CBRM and the province means that you have an advocate in your corner. CANS offers award-winning industry training, numerous networking opportunities throughout the year, and exclusive discounts on services that support your business. Their association works tirelessly to create opportunities for members to come together, discuss shared challenges, and celebrate victories. Be part of a network that goes beyond construction sites, a community that supports you every step of the way. Together, let's build a brighter future for Cape Breton. Visit their website at cans.ns.ca to learn how they can be a foundation for your growth, support lasting connections, and build strong communities. Back in 2022, the Cape Breton Regional Municipality issued a call for proposals to develop a prime piece of property it owned on the Sydney waterfront. The winning proposal was by Doucette Developments. This Bedford-based family of companies does everything from development and construction to property management, leasing, and maintenance. There's a local connection here. Doug Doucette, the company's founder and CEO, grew up in Westmount. We'll talk some more about that later. Before getting into the details of the waterfront project, I asked him and Darla Gadet, who does business development for the group of companies, for their take on the housing market. Here's how Darla would describe it, followed by Doug.
Chaotic is the word that I would use. It's a crisis for the folks that don't have accessible housing or affordable housing. It's a crisis for the builders and the developers. So it sort of creates some degree of chaos, I would think. Everyone's pointing a finger at one another and this person and that person. But really, we're just trying all to come up with a solution that works.
Yeah, I've been to a bunch of real estate forums recently, and I've heard desperate. I've heard crisis is a common one. So I think all of the words describe it. You know, I think Darla hit it on the head. We're going to talk more about innovation and solutions rather than the problem.
What would you define as the problem?
If you consider the factors in the problem, the factors is lack of housing and why, specifically in Nova Scotia and Cape Breton, we haven't seen this type of immigration numbers that we're seeing now over the last couple of years. So that's a big one. And then I think just a building boom in general. Sydney's not seen a build boom in all the years that I can remember. So prosperity, with prosperity comes people, and they need to move into housing.
In conversations about how to fix the housing crisis, some fingers point at developers and say they simply need to build more. I gave Doug and Darla an opportunity to explain why they might not build, even when demand is so high.
It's a real simple formula as a developer. This is the best way that I can describe the development and how we work. It's cost of construction versus cost of rent. So, you know, what does it cost me to build the product and what can I get for rent? So in the case of Sydney, unfortunately, the cost of construction is more from the history of unions and all that kind of stuff. And it's just the reality of doing business here is a little bit more. We're on an island, we're hard to get to, and that's a reality. Cost of rent is traditionally less than you would attain in cities like Halifax. So when you look at a developer, they may tend to shy away from Cape Breton because, hey, it's going to cost me more and it's going to be harder to get the rent and the margins are going to be really thin. as much as I hate to say it, that is a sincere problem, and we have to find a solution for that.
Just to broaden a little bit more, not just Cape Breton focused, but in Nova Scotia, the labor market right now is not great. Cost of everything, supply chain, cost of materials. So those are all factors that really are hard on the builders and the developers that are really trying to make these solutions happen and happen quickly.
All of these factors, from the cost of labor and materials to the availability of labor and materials and the expected rents, shrank the pool of developers bidding for the Sydney waterfront project. Doucette Developments hesitated too, but Doug decided this project was about more than money.
The RFP was out and somebody had sent it off to me and said, Doug, being from Cape Breton, you should really look at this. And I made a few calls from some developers around the city of Halifax and said, hey, are you looking at this? Hey, are you looking? Nope, nobody was touching it. We've got more than enough work in Halifax. We don't need to kind of go to Sydney to look for work. So I said, you know what? I'm from Westbound. I have to look at this.
This is 100% the perfect project for Doug Doucette. He is from Cape Breton. His family is from Cape Breton. He takes risks. He's a smart businessman. It's a legacy project.
Could you guys speak a little bit more to that consideration of the higher cost and the lower return? How did that factor into this decision?
I'll go on record to say this will be the riskiest project that Doucette Developments or I have ever been involved in for those two reasons. I mean, and not just those two reasons. Adds the labor right now, if you went to get labor in Cape Breton, it's going to be very hard to find labor. Interest rates, we didn't talk about interest rates. They're on top of that again. So risk is one factor. However, there's always a number of different ways. When Douglas McClellan was going to lead this project locally in Sydney, when I went to him to ask him to join our team, I said, this will be one of the toughest projects you ever do. We're going to have to beat it seven ways from Sunday. We're going to have to be innovative to get the number where it needs to be and still achieve the goal of what we want, premium waterfront living. It is one of the best properties that I know of outside of Halifax. I mean, it's a gorgeous waterfront property and it deserves what we're going to do there. And it's going to be a real tough road getting to the end result, but we're up for the challenge.
And have you come up with any innovative solutions, or are you able to speak to how you're going to get creative to make this work?
Well, as an example, we started as a concrete building and we couldn't go very far in the concrete building because we couldn't even get someone to return our calls, let alone see if they'd come to Sydney and do form work on 10-story buildings. Now, that said, there is a contractor starting to do that kind of work in Sydney. So we're talking to them and seeing if we can work with them to maybe get out of the ground with some concrete. But we are going to change the type of construction steel. So we'll go to original steel structure, there are two very qualified steel contractors in the city that could help us out that we have a long-term relationship with. Steel is kind of in our blood, makes for a great story. And if we finish the budget on steel and that doesn't work, we'll have to look at another form of construction. But we're looking at every type of construction. We're looking at bringing in, materials on the water that can be delivered. We have a lot of room, a lot of land there. So as an example, a precast concrete panel could come from an Irving plant, St. John, on a boat. Very cost effective as opposed to bringing precast from Toronto, which might need, two tractor trailer loads or 10 tractor trailer loads and be very, very expensive. So we're just at that stage now with our budgets to see where we have to be innovative. We're going to be considerably smaller units than Sydney's used to, again, to get the costs per square foot down. So there's going to be a whole lot of things that come into play as to how we're going to be innovative. Our industry could use a whole lot more innovation, but it's hard to be innovative when you're trying to deliver a premium product. It's hard to give people, waterfront living and a luxury level when you're trying to save money. So that's also a challenge.
I'd love to hear more about the vision, like how many buildings, how many units, what do you guys got planned for this?
So it's a two or possibly three phase project. The first phase is a residential unit coming out of what they call as a podium, which is a huge concrete garage with two levels of parking. We will have a total of 400 parking spots, a complete residential tower with rooftop patio access. The second tower will be more of a mixed living. We will have a combination of commercial retail on the ground floor in both buildings, and then we'll have office space combined with residential living, possibly condominiums. We've been all rentals today, but we may consider condominiums. And we'll be a pathway to the waterfront. We believe that we are a draw to the waterfront, both from the waterfront up to our services and from our services down to the waterfront. So we're going to have a very appealing entryway from the actual boardwalk up to our first level. On our first level will be a number of mixed retail, commercial uses, restaurant, coffee shop, retailers. We'll have a center courtyard in between the two buildings. And my vision is to have, call it center court, and it'll be a community engaged area where on certain Saturdays or Sundays, we may close off the parking. You'd be able to come in there for a concert, park somewhere, walk down, and we'll have a band playing on at the end of the concourse overlooking the water. So imagine the sunset coming down, a local great band, and 800 people enjoying a mid-afternoon concert, or could be buskers, or could be lighting of a Christmas tree. I remember when my grandfather was owned a company called JW Rudder, which was a fairly big mechanical company in Sydney, and their office was in Whitney Pier. It was like selling tickets because they had the big glass window and you could watch the Santa Claus parade through the glass window. And everybody used to love to get out of the cold and watch the Santa Claus parade. So it's kind of the same idea. It's kind of a real cool concept. And we're really engaging the community, which I think is something that's really important.
Yeah. And as far as that community engagement, did I read that there's going to be more opportunities for feedback and input about like what kinds of services or amenities that they'd like to see?
We will continue to have focus groups. We plan to come down through the winter. And we're probably going to coordinate at least two focus groups for the community command and tell us what's important to them. And we've met every industry in Cape Breton. I think we've had or almost 200 different people that we've met, everything from lobbyists to industry groups, to the partnerships, to the chamber, to, you know, downtown Sydney, the Port Authority. We've met every single person we think that might be interested in the project, and we're listening. And I know it's incredibly important. We've got to get this right. It's not a case in Sydney. We don't have the luxury of sometimes in Toronto or Vancouver or even Halifax as of late, you can build it and they will come. But we're trying to do something here with a population of 30,000 people on an island who hasn't seen prosperity in a long time. And we got one chance to get this right.
Darla says the folks working on the development really are reading all of the feedback forms and working to make sure that this project has a positive impact on the residents, visitors, and workers of downtown Sydney. She also wanted to highlight that Doucette Developments is a good employer that's creating opportunities for all.
I'm a woman in the construction and development industry, and this team is giving me any opportunity that I could ever want. We're quite diversified here. We have women who are trades. We have women who are estimators, project managers, lead designers. We have all kinds of great people working on our team. And so we're doing our very best and we want to see success.
In December 2023, Doucette Developments revealed the name of the project, Edgewater, and launched a website at edgewater.com. The at is spelled out, not the symbol. We'll put the link in the show notes. On this website, you can see renderings of what the development will potentially look like, read FAQs with hot-button questions like parking, and find links to residential and commercial inquiry forms. So getting back to the core topic of this episode, how does this luxury project mitigate the housing crisis? Well, Phase 1 will add 166 units to Sydney's inventory of housing, a considerable number when inventory is limited. Since Darla expects that most of the occupants will be locals, they're also expecting a ripple effect.
The folks from CBU, all of the new doctors, the nurses, the administrative staff, perhaps some couples that are retiring or some folks that are just looking to downsize their spaces. What they're going to be doing is relocating to these premium luxury quarters. And so from there, their existing dwellings or their existing houses, apartments are going to then free up so that the folks that are really looking for that affordable housing component and to be able to also relocate. Even though we're not maybe building an affordable housing complex, we are creating the opportunity for folks to live in more affordable places.
So what's the timeline looking like for the project?
We're under design for the first phase. We hope to get all our consultants on board. We're doing a bunch of testing. We're really a bookend of the community college, so we're going to go through the same trials and tribulations that they've gone through. But we should be in the ground for summer of fall of 2024. The project, the first phase is a three-year build-up between the two buildings. Theoretically, you typically get in the first building quicker than the second one. That's the way we like to phase it so that we can assist with your financing. And again, the innovation of this will be to start collecting cash flow before we're complete. But the second phase, which I didn't speak to yet, Second phase could be the additional 3 to 5 years. We got some really cool ideas and concepts. And we are presently having a couple of different studies done to see if our concepts could be adopted in Cape Breton. So I can't wait to share those. They're going to be very exciting. Phase two could be a real, real exciting piece.
If higher end accommodations are in your budget, pricing for the rentals in phase one will range from about $2 a square foot up to $3.50 a square foot. And FYI, the Edgewater development isn't the only project Doucet Developments is working on in CBRM. They bought a 35-acre parcel behind the Ben's Bread facility on George Street that they're hoping to extend into some residential communities. They're also looking at Charlotte Street. Downtown Sydney's recently reconstructed commercial drag is already revitalizing, and it's poised to get a lot more foot traffic once the new Nova Scotia Community College waterfront campus opens in September 2024, and once his Edgewater development is occupied in a few years. Doug thinks Charlotte Street is a huge opportunity, but smaller landowners and developers might need help to make something happen.
There's two or three projects all around the Charlotte Street area that people have talked to me about, and they just don't know how to deal with this. Like, if you're just a developer who has a piece of land, all this other stuff gets really scary when you start talking financing and construction and leasing and commercial leases. And, you know, that's probably our innovation in itself, is that we have all those under one roof. But if you're just a standalone developer, it's really, really hard to get your head around. And sometimes it's just easier to say, you know what, I'm not going to do it. We need to get out in front of that.
What's your advice to those developers, or, you know, are there any opportunities to bring these projects over that hump?
Talking to somebody like myself, I'm the most, you know, transparent and easy to get in touch with guys. So, hey, reach out and talk to me. Even though we have all the parts and pieces to do so much as a developer, we also can single out any one of those. So, you know, we can provide construction services to help you as a developer. We can provide leasing services to help you as a developer. We can provide, you know, property management after you're done to help you. So I always say, you know, Doucet Developments can be as involved or as not involved as you need us.
Absolutely. I think that that's important to mention as well. It might sound like it's big and scary to engage with a developer, but to Doug's point, we can give you as much or as little as you need or you're looking for, and you may not know what you need. The team is very approachable. We are interested and encouraging of change, so we want to help, right? So if you have a question, pick up the phone and call.
Doug and Darla also think there's a role for government to help move these projects along. We'll get into that towards the end of the episode when all of our guests offer solutions to the housing crisis. But first, a message from Doucet Developments, whose sponsorship helped make this deep dive on housing and development in Unamagi, Cape Breton possible. Doucet Developments, with over 25 years of experience, has earned its reputation as a respected development and construction partner in Atlantic Canada. Their expertise spans real estate, construction, property management, leasing, maintenance, and hospitality and retail sectors. They focus on innovation and leveraging their extensive knowledge to streamline and enhance the client experience. Doucet is the umbrella company for various subsidiaries, including RCS Construction, Millwright Woodworking, Tier 2 Developments, PMCO Inc., PMCO Brokerage, and Hero Hospitality. This includes partnerships with entities like Glen Arbor, Microtel Antigonish and Summerside, Gabriel Pizza, Harvest, and others, highlighting their diverse portfolio. The company prioritizes building relationships and nurturing careers, teams, and communities. They have a strong presence in markets from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, to Cornerbrook, Newfoundland, and Labrador, known for their ability to identify and capitalize on emerging market opportunities. Their family values and commitment to creating inspiring communities are central to their approach. Doucet Developments is excited to be working with the CBRM and other local partners in transforming the Sydney waterfront into a landmark destination, ushering in continued prosperity to the region. All right, let's meet our final two guests for this episode, both from By the Bay Properties. This Vancouver-based company builds, improves, and manages commercial and residential real estate properties from coast to coast. President Bobby Dubow and co-founder Mario Vitro entered the Unamagi Cape Breton market a couple years ago when Mario and his wife, a Cape Bretoner, helped her parents buy a house on the island. In a coincidence all too typical of Cape Breton, they bought a house in Doug Doucet's hometown of Westmount. Mario was shocked at how affordable real estate was compared to Vancouver. He asked their realtor, his wife's aunt, of course, to look for apartment buildings too. She found a 4-unit multiplex in Whitney Pier for $350,000. After looking at average rent prices, Mario and Bobby almost thought it was too good to be true. So they came to Cape Breton to see for themselves. And all they saw was opportunity, especially in neighborhoods of CBRM that have been neglected by some builders and landlords. Here's Mario, followed by Bobby.
I think that we benefit from having seen Vancouver explode over 20 to 30 years. Areas of town that, you know, you never wanted to go to because it was so bad in terms of quality of living, the standards of the dwellings, the type of people, nefarious characters that operate around there. Those moved from, over my lifetime, the places you never want to be to the most popular areas in town. And I think it takes a certain kind of experience to know that that change can occur. But when you have your old viewpoints and you're kind of sort of stuck in your ways of what it used to be, it's hard to look at an area and just find the imagination that it could be something different. When we see a lot of areas in Cape Breton, especially along the water, we know how desirable the waterfront has been in Vancouver, even for areas that were mainly industrial or poorer. But over time, they attracted a lot of people. Humans are actually attracted to bodies of water, want to live around them. And that's how you start to get the imagination working of what something can be versus taking an assumption of what it always has been. Especially in a place like Glace Bay, we see a massive opportunity there, but everyone locally that we talk to doesn't want really anything to do with it.
Like when you ask somebody in Sydney about Glace Bay, you kind of get mixed reactions. I think everything's there. It's 15 minutes from the university, maybe 25 to downtown Sydney. Not all the growth can happen in, let's say, downtown Sydney. Other areas, surrounding areas, need to be utilized to build the housing, revitalize the neighborhoods. And it kind of all, once you start building, I think that just gets the ball rolling and making that area more attractive.
By the Bay immediately invested in properties in these areas. But like other developers, they encountered labor challenges. This problem was made worse by the fact that they weren't locals. It took some pivoting and some patience, but they found a way to overcome.
Originally, when we started, we were two guys from away. We didn't know anybody, and we were at the bottom of everybody's priority list in the middle of a labor shortage, right? So in the start, we were doing mostly turnkey operation, but now we've kind of developed a network of local contractors that we partnered with. We've also developed our own team as well. So we've kind of developed a reputation over the last couple of years where we have builders comfortable, willing to work with us.
We have to come every quarter, basically, and show our face in town and show people what progress we'd made on things that we wanted to do and, you know, see the whites of their eyes and earn their trust as well. There is that old boys club type of mentality that's tough to break into, but very pleased and happy with the reception we've gotten once we've gotten to really know people and they see us as trustworthy and able to deliver on what we say we're going to do.
With their team and partners in place, they were able to start renovating properties and expand their portfolio. They've bought land for mini homes. And since CBRM is pushing for developers to build bigger multi-unit buildings, that's their next area of focus. Here's what their construction pipeline looks like.
Mini homes, we've already placed orders. I think we've got 40 in the pipeline in terms of mini homes. We will have our first units arriving, I would say, end of February. And then construction for multi-units depends on what CBRM will allow us to do. The only thing we could say for sure right now is we've got 40 mini homes for sure on the pipeline with the potential, I would say, I don't know, 80 new units by the end of 2024.
Well, put it this way, it's not for lack of anything that we can control. Typically, when a developer is looking to build, there'll be certain bottlenecks, accessible land, the ability to finance. None of that is stopping us. It's only a matter of going through the permitting process and getting approvals for being able to build. If CBRM said tomorrow, you can have permits for whatever you want, then we basically have a budget for whatever they'll allow us to build.
Yeah, you heard that right. Budget isn't a problem for By the Bay Properties. That's because By the Bay isn't Mario and Bobby's only source of income. And through their other gig, they've made friends with deep pockets.
Myself, I'm in the finance world, and I run a merchant bank where I take companies public, and Bobby assists in some of that as well. So we can afford to invest more into improving our properties. And then when the opportunities come along and permits are granted, you know, I've raised hundreds of millions of dollars for growth companies. And so we have a large, vast network of financiers who are chomping at the bit to deploy capital into a growing place like Cape Breton instead of deploying it into a place like Vancouver that's very saturated.
At this point, you might be thinking, if these guys have so much money, why don't they build affordable housing? That happens to be exactly what they're doing. A lot of their mini homes will be set at affordable rates. They're also taking advantage of provincial and federal opportunities to provide more affordable units. Anyone looking for affordable housing can join their waitlist to be notified as soon as anything becomes available. Their website is bythebayproperties.ca. A direct link to the waitlist has been added to the show notes. But By the Bay isn't waiting around for government programs to start giving back to the community. They've been helping out in other ways.
In our first year, just simply on our own, we've provided homes for 40 new people here in Fiona. We had some homes that we were bringing to market soon. They weren't quite ready, but they were available for them to live in as an alternative to living in a home with no roof. We've done a lot of work with CBU as well. We created an emergency rental housing fund. A lot of the students here are living in places that most people wouldn't be comfortable living in. So we've created a rental fund at CVU. We've donated to their student food bank. We've donated a lot of our money to local organizations, sports and recreation, anything that kind of ties people to the community.
One of the reasons they've been able to keep their rental rates reasonable is because whenever a unit is vacant, they gut it and make it energy efficient. They're comfortable investing the money up front because they're confident they'll get it back, especially when one of the modernizations is switching from expensive heating oil. The switch is made even more attractive thanks to government incentives.
Yeah, Efficiency Nova Scotia, like it's incredible the rebates that they're giving out right now for heat pumps. They're taking people off oil.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby, they'll give you 80% of the cost back to put in a heat pump?
Yeah, they'll give you up to 80%. It's a significant investment on their end. And it's crazy for landlords not to take advantage of that if they can.
Thus far, we've heard from two developers, By the Bay Properties and Doucette Developments, about what they're doing to address the housing crisis. Since they're in the trenches, we also wanted to hear their thoughts on what they think can be done to encourage more development in Unimagi, Cape Breton. For By the Bay Properties, they wanted to start by acknowledging what's already being done. Here's Bobby.
It's not very often where you'd have municipal, provincial, and federal governments all agreeing on the same thing. Housing is the number one priority for all three. There's a great environment provided by the government programs right now. Every time I have a conversation with the provincial or federal government, they say, well, there's more coming down the pipeline too. There's plenty of local advocates as well. Cape Breton Partnership has been great for us. If it wasn't for them, maybe we still would be in Cape Breton. So they've introduced us to plenty of people, plenty of opportunities. It does seem like we're just saying a lot of good stuff. If we were going to have one request selfishly, I'd say cancel the out of province tax, because as you said, we're from BC. In our first 6 months, we created homes for 40 people. And then they implemented a tax on anybody from outside the province has to pay upfront when they purchase. They have proposed a tax on empty homes. They ended up scrapping that.
It's kind of a shocking notion. They would rather the homes stay empty than be owned by someone out of province.
Going back to Doucette Developments now, Doug Doucette would like to see CBRM and other local governments make it easier for developers to succeed. How exactly? He offered this example from Prince Edward Island.
I just built a hotel in Summerside, and we didn't even want to do it. We went and met with the city. They asked us to come and talk to them, and they just wouldn't let us leave. You know, from tax breaks to free land, like they just made it so that I couldn't walk away. And we did the development. We opened the hotel in December, and, you know, it's been a great success, and it's been a pleasure working with the town of Summerside. but it needs to be that way in Cape Breton. It needs to be a place where when we get someone coming sniffing around, we can't let them leave. We got to convince them that this is the place to do business. Give a developer, you know, a bonus, maybe it's a point system or a tax setup that the more I invest. I mean, you look at Member2 and all the great things they've done, like they continue to put their neck on the line and take the risk and do great things. And that's inspirational. So they should be rewarded for that.
This is our reputation. And like Doug said, putting your neck on the line, that means a lot, right? I think that one way to sort of ease the pain of developers and construction companies is streamlining sort of construction permits, providing incentives. And I know that government is trying their best to do that.
Let's circle back to Roger Bootlier from the Nova Scotia Association of Realtors. He also wanted to give kudos to local governments and stakeholders, both for fostering an economic environment where investment in housing makes sense and for tackling the housing crisis with a can-do attitude.
I'm in the housing industry, but I mean, you have to have an economy to sustain the housing. There's a lot of entrepreneurship. You see a lot of private investment coming into Cape Breton. There's jobs in Cape Breton. The whole Member2 housing initiative that's happening right now, I mean, that in and of itself is quite amazing as well, and something that folks should be very proud of. There's just a lot going on in Cape Breton, and a lot of it is mindset. When NSAR meets with the elected officials, and in specifically CBRM's mayor, they have a very positive outlook and attitude towards housing, and they are taking initiatives to help solve the problem, which is fantastic. They're not turning a blind eye to it. So that's another factor, because not all municipalities are forward thinking like that. And we've had discussions with Ms. McDougall for 2, 3, 4 years now on housing. And you know, we have offered up all the data that we can provide to them to help them make informed decisions with regards to housing. And she even went so far as like the council now has it. It's actually a standing agenda item. The counselors are discussing what's going on in your area. What are you doing that we could do to help solve this issue? So, I mean, those little things are often taken for granted, but that they help solve the problem.
All that said, Roger does think more can be done.
I guess, you know, take advantage of the programs that the government does offer. There was the Housing Accelerator Fund, and CBRM actually took advantage of that. I mean, these are initiatives that the federal government has put out to help municipalities solve the housing crisis. So let's use what's available to us. The missing middle is the key to this. So if the municipal and provincial governments could work with developers to help add inventory to the missing middle, so the row houses, the duplexes, the townhouses, the between 350 and 500,000 price range, that is what is required right now.
This conversation on housing and development is almost done. We're going to give Roger the final word. He sums up where we're at, where we still need to go, and how we're going to get there.
There are buyers and renters for the inventory that's being developed. So let's keep the momentum going. Let's keep the positive mindset. Yes, it's hard to take at times. I totally understand that. We do need to do more on the social end and on the senior end of the housing spectrum. I mean, we can't lose sight of that, but we can't get discouraged and stop. That would be the worst thing we could do. We would go back to the days where people would leave Nova Scotia and move elsewhere. We finally shifted that, if you will, that people want to stay here now and can stay here. If you just look at the headlines in the media, quite honestly, it's depressing. But there are a lot of good things going on, and that doesn't get reported. People are trying to solve the housing issue that we have in Nova Scotia. I think Nova Scotia is doing a better job than most in solving the issue. And CMHC bore that out when they said we had the most housing starts in Canada this past year. Let's just work together, solve the problem, knowing that it's not an overnight fix, that, you know, 5 years, I think, is going to be the new dawn when we will start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But we have to get to that 5 years, and you have to do the work behind the scenes to get there.
Big thanks to Roger Bootlier, Doug Doucette, Darla Gaudette, Bobby Dubow, and Mario Vitro for sharing their stories and insights. Check out the show notes for links to find out more about the Nova Scotia Association of Realtors, Doucette Developments, and Buy the Bay Properties. Thanks again to our episode sponsors, the Construction Association of Nova Scotia and Doucette Developments. If you're a newcomer to Unamagi Cape Breton, or hope to be sometime in the future, you should definitely check out the Cape Breton Partnership's other podcast, Welcome to Cape Breton. Next time on Invest in Cape Breton, we're talking tourism. If you hit that follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you'll be notified when it drops. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a rating or review. Our theme music is Under My Skin by Glace Bay's own Elise Aaron. Invest in Cape Breton is produced by Storied Places Media, a proudly Cape Breton-owned business operated by me, Michelle Sampson. Thanks for listening.